I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. Don't miss Cold's new Season 3, where I look into the unsolved disappearance of Cherie Warren, a woman last seen leaving her job at a Salt Lake City office in 1985. Police cast suspicion on Cherie's estranged husband and boyfriend, but never made any arrests or recovered Cherie's remains. Find Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie, anywhere you get your podcasts.
If money affects your life in any way, Money Making Sense will talk about it. Be financially healthy, wealthy, and wise. Here's your host, Heather Kelly.
Welcome to Money Making Sense, the show that talks about all things money. Today, we're going to talk about how can you get wealthy without depriving yourself at the same time. Joining me today is Rachel Podnos O'Leary, and she's the author of 21st Century Wealth. So welcome to the show, Rachel.
Hi, thanks. It's great to be here.
I came across some information about you, and one thing that stood out was for those of us, including me, who follow Dave Ramsey, you're like, oh, like you do not have to sacrifice and live live so strictly, but you can still build your wealth or get out of debt. So I am curious, how am I to not deprive myself?
Yeah, so, I mean, not to hate on Dave Ramsey at all, because at the end of the day, I think he's helped so many people, and he's doing really good work. But I will say, I don't think he's everyone's cup of tea, and I do think some people are either intimidated or turned off by kind of the aggressiveness with which he advises you to, you know, pursue a saving strategy. And I think that there are a lot of people out there that really need a more moderate approach if they are going to save at all. And that kind of more all or nothing approach, it's just not going to work for them. They'll either get frugality fatigue and give up and totally blow the budget, or they'll be miserable, which is not the point. The point is to be happy and healthy and in the end wealthy. And I just think that for some people, a more moderate approach is the key to success there.
I would actually agree. One thing I do advise people is, hey, just because I found my path with Dave Ramsey, it doesn't work for everybody. Because before I discovered Dave Ramsey's approach to getting out of debt, I tried a bunch of different people and it just did not click with me. Now, even though I was very strict in the beginning, getting myself out of debt, only paying money down toward some credit cards and a car payment that I had to finish up. Once I did that, and then I was now putting money away into retirement or, you know, my $1,000 emergency fund, I did start spreading it around a little bit more, more liberally than Dave Ramsey would recommend. So I agree. It does not have to be an all or nothing, but I think it's a nice pathway to show you, hey, look how quickly you can get out of debt if you throw everything at your debts for a while. And then after that, mm-hmm. you know, maybe work in your own time or whatever feels most comfortable for you, start putting a money away for savings.
Absolutely. I don't disagree with that at all. And like I said, I Dave Ramsey has helped so many people. I really can't say at all that anything he's saying or advising is wrong. I think for me personally, and given I'm, you know, a woman in my mid-30s, I don't know, maybe it's just, I don't know if it's a generational thing or if it's just a me thing, but I just kind of felt like he didn't resonate with me as much as someone maybe more relatable
right.
to me would be.
And I get that. I have learned so much from talking to the generation behind me because there are things they talk about and I am just like, it's all over my head. And I'm like, what are you saying? But it resonates with many, many of my listeners. And I'm going, oh, I've got the envelopes. And they're like, what is an envelope? I mean, it is.
What's a check?
Exactly. So there isn't just one pathway for everybody. And I totally understand that. So I am curious if for you, when you wrote your book, The 21st Century Wealth, how is it that you advise people to start them getting themselves out of debt so that they could then build their wealth? Because I don't, or maybe it's hand in hand, because I personally don't think you can build wealth unless you're out of debt.
Oh, 100%. And that is that's a huge part of my book. So my book, I wrote it for millennials, for my peers. And so the whole book does assume that you're of, you know, a certain age and that really probably your biggest advantage is time. Time that you have. You may not have assets. You may be, you know, up to your ears in debt, but you have time and it's a very precious resource if you use it to your advantage when it comes to building wealth. So I recommend in the book first that the reader does what I call a personal financial audit. And there are five steps to that. So the first step is just confronting your financial reality. So a lot of people, they don't know where to start because they don't know where they are. They don't know their net worth. They don't know where their money is going. If you ask, you know, how much do you spend? How much do you save? A lot of people off the top of their head, they don't know the answer to that. So the first step is just seeing where you are. What is your net worth? What are your debts? What interest rate are you paying on those debts? And to really dig in and get the nitty gritty of exactly where you're starting. And the second step is just to educate yourself to gain, you know, a basic understanding of how debt works and of general personal finance topics like basic investing and retirement accounts, pre-tax versus post-tax savings, all those things, which is kind of the meat and potatoes of my book. The book is meant to teach everyone kind of the basics of personal finance that they need to go to move forward to building a financial plan, which is the next two steps. So the third step is setting goals and setting kind of long-term financial goals. And what I recommend is setting a goal of financial independence, meaning you can pay for your chosen lifestyle without relying on others for income or credit, which means, you know, becoming debt-free, having a high positive net worth. So that was the third step, setting goals. The fourth step is make a plan to achieve those goals. So write it down, have a detailed plan of how you're going to meet each of the short-term goals that are prerequisites to meeting the long-term goal of financial independence. And finally, the fifth step is tracking, because a financial plan is not it's not a snapshot of one day or one month of your life. It needs to be kind of a living, breathing thing that you update and that evolves as your life evolves and that changes as things in your life might change, whether that means a change in income, having a baby, moving, all the things that happen, you know, on and on in our lives. You're finding every time a big life event happens that touches on your finances, that needs to be taken into account in the plan. And I guess to get back to your original question is how best to get out of debt. Specifically for that, I generally like the avalanche method. I think that's what makes the most financial sense. So, you know, once you have an idea of exactly what all of your debts are, you start with the highest interest rate loan, you pay that off, and you go on down from there.
This is actually a good place to take a break. When we come back, we can go a little bit more in depth in the different methods. You mentioned avalanche method. I've been using snowball method, but then we'll go from there to then building our wealth. So we'll be right back with Rachel Podnos O'Leary. She's the author of 21st Century Wealth.
2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
There's desperation and anguish.
More than 80,000 Afghans have since arrived in America, but this story is still unfolding. I'm Andrea Martin. In my new podcast, Stranger Becomes Neighbor, we'll find out what happens to these new arrivals in our communities. Who would help our newest neighbors? Follow us at KSLPodcast.com, Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.
Welcome back to Money Making Sense, the show that affects your life in any way money-wise. We're talking about it. And today we're talking about how to build your wealth. Joining me today is Rachel Podnos O'Leary. She is the author of 21st Century Wealth. Now, in the first segment, we talked a bit about the steps to actually getting yourself out of debt, because that's the first thing you have to do before you can actually start building your wealth. But right at the end, Rachel, you mentioned that you like the avalanche method. So maybe you can explain just in a little bit more detail how that works in case somebody wants to try this.
Sure. That's a debt reduction strategy you prioritize pay down of your debts in order of highest to lowest interest rate. So, for example, let's say you have a home mortgage at 3.5% and a student loan at 6.5% and credit card debt at 18%. You would prioritize pay down of the credit card debt first. The student loan debt at 6.5% second, and last, your last priority would be the mortgage. And so it's basically paying off debt that's the most expensive first, regardless of the loan balance amounts. You go by interest rate.
And I have had a lot of people talk about that. I've used the snowball method, which is just slightly different. And that means you pay the lowest balance first, no matter what the interest rate is. To go over your example, I would try to pay off my student loan first, because if we go with that has a balance of $5,000, even though that's 6.5% interest, the balance is only $5,000. And I'm going to pay that off much faster than I would a $20,000 credit card debt, which is at 18%. Mm-hmm. The reason I do that is because if I can get that $5,000 paid off within maybe 6 months to a year, when you're done, you're like, oh, look, I've accomplished something. Hey, this really works. And then you start putting all that money you were paying toward the student loan toward the credit card debt. Not that you couldn't pay down your credit card faster as well if you throw all your extra money at it, but it's just going to take longer. And sometimes in that first segment, you talked about people getting discouraged sometimes, especially if they are trying to be too frugal and they get burnout. Sometimes I think if they don't see an immediate result or a fairly fast result, it could prohibit them from continuing with that method.
Yeah, certainly. And I think the psychological benefits of the snowball approach versus the avalanche approach, that's the biggest reason I think to do snowball over avalanche, is kind of the psychological aspect of getting that small win early on and feeling like you accomplished something that might motivate you to keep going. And if you're a person who, if you think that is what's going to work for you, then that's what you should do. Because the point at the end of the day is paying debt down. And if you're doing that, then you're heading in the right direction. I do think avalanche method, when you look at it from a purely quantitative standpoint, kind of in a vacuum, it's what makes the most sense in a purely quantitatively.
Right. I also totally get, because I'm a money person, and the reason for the avalanche method is you do not want to be paying that 18% any longer than you have to, because it's just piling on more interest to what you have to pay off. So I get that. And I think you're right. If you aren't having as big of a, you know, psychological need to have a quick fix, so to speak, which is what basically the snowball method does, is more of a quick fix, then the avalanche method, I think, would work for you. But again, it's all personalized. Everybody isn't a cookie cutter. You know, they all have different needs and different financial ways of paying, you know, that they can pay. But that's
absolutely
what I just love having this conversation, because then that way we can compare. People have a better understanding of what's out there. Okay, so let's say we've done that. Either somebody did the avalanche method or the snowball method. They've got themselves out of debt. Now what do we do, Rachel?
So now you build a high net worth, basically. And I would say, for starters, everyone should have an emergency fund. I'm sure you've probably covered that on your show a bunch. And my recommendation for an emergency fund, and this is partially colored by the last, you know, 15 or 18 months, however long that we've since COVID. You know, I think the last year or so has shown us all that life is very unpredictable, and you really never know what's going to happen. And so I believe in a larger rather than smaller emergency fund. I think everyone should have at least 6 months of fixed expenses set aside in cash. And that's your rainy day fund, your emergency fund for a job loss, for disability if you're not fully insured for that, major medical bill, whatever. You know, you never know what life's going to throw at you. So I would say first, that should be your top priority. And I would say that you should have an emergency fund before you're done with debt pay down, actually.
Yeah, you're going to have emergencies or could have emergencies come up while you're trying to pay down the debt. It's not like a blown tire or a health issue is just going to wait until you're all done with your avalanche method. So, yeah,
exactly. And if your goal is debt reduction, which it should be, if you are in a place where you're in a lot of debt or still accumulating debt and you're trying to go in the other direction, and you don't have an emergency fund and you're instead prioritizing debt pay down, ironically, an emergency that comes up could actually just add to the debt and send you in the other direction. So I do believe in having an emergency fund. That's number one. And beyond that is long-term savings. And that's where it gets highly individualized based on your specific goals. Generally, funding a retirement plan is a great idea for almost everyone who has one available to them. If you're self-employed, you can fund a self-employed retirement plan. There are multiple types of those. If you have an employer-sponsored plan, those are great options. And then there's always individual retirement accounts, IRAs. And these are all tax advantage saving vehicles. So one way or another, depending on what you're funding and how you're funding it, you're getting a tax benefit to help you save more. And so that would be my next step, is to fund a retirement plan. Or if you have, you know, an expense goal, like you want to save for a down payment on a home that you can use to build your net worth by then, you know, building equity in the home, then that's another thing to save towards. And in that case, I would recommend saving cash.
With Dave Ramsey, and this is one area where I diverge from his plan, is he has these six steps, and it's like, do step one, which is the emergency fund, the $1,000 emergency fund. Step two, get rid of all your debt. And basically, it's like, don't do anything. Like, once you've got the $1,000, then everything goes to getting rid of your debt. And then after that is the six-month fund for if you lose your job. And then it goes into retirement and then funding your kids' college and, you know, a couple other things. But while I understand his concept, it's like if you throw all your extra money toward these steps, they get funded faster than if you, you know, if I had $100 left over at the end of every month and I put 20 toward my retirement and 20 toward my kids' college education and 20 toward a down payment on a home, that's going to take a really long time to fund all of those. What is your take on spreading the wealth?
Yeah, it's hard. I think that this is kind of financial planning in a nutshell is trying to answer this question of, okay, there's a finite amount of cash flow. There are many different goals and issues and places we want to spread that money around. How do we allocate the resources that we have most effectively to, you know, accomplish our goals and to build wealth? I take a more individualized and nuanced approach than the six-step Dave Ramsey method. For example, when it comes to debt pay down, I don't always recommend completely zeroing out all debts before moving on to putting money away for savings. So I have this kind of thought matrix for debt pay down. And it's first, does regardless of the interest rate, it could be at 2% interest. And we know most likely we can do a lot better in the stock market than 2% over the long term, right? This is very cheap debt. But if it keeps you up at night, if you're very debt averse and you can't stand to have the debt and you know you won't have peace of mind, even if you have this 2% loan, then you should pay it off. To me, peace of mind is priceless. And you should always pay off debt, no matter the interest rate, if it keeps you up at night. But let's say it doesn't keep you up at night. Then the question is it high interest debt or is it low interest debt? And how likely is it that you can make a better return by investing elsewhere, for example, in the stock market for the long term? Then, you know, so if we assume you can make roughly 7% a year over the long term by investing in a diversified portfolio of stocks, and you're paying 3% on a mortgage, for example, a 30-year mortgage, well, quantitatively, in a purely quantitative sense, then it makes sense to put money towards investing instead of totally prioritizing debt pay down.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. So given your example you just gave, if I put up to $10,000 a year into the stock market and it gives me a 7% return on that investment year after year over the long term, when I go to retire, I will have a ton more money that I can then put toward the rest of my mortgage that I was paying 3% interest on every year.
Right. Because yes, exactly. You'll come out ahead in purely quantitative terms. So like every dollar you put down on that mortgage, you're going to guaranteed 3% return. Now, returns when you invest in stocks or many other asset classes, they're not guaranteed. So that's another factor. And that's why I say if you have high interest debt, so to me, that's roughly anything over 3.5-4% interest, it becomes less and less likely when you're working with debt that's over that interest rate that you can do better, make a better return by investing elsewhere. That's why I say if you have high interest debt, even if it doesn't bother you, even if it doesn't keep you up at night, you should pay that down. You should prioritize pay down of that over investing. So really kind of to summarize it, the first question is, does it bother you? And the second question is, what's the interest rate? Is it high interest or low? And that's kind of the thought process I use for advising people on debt pay down versus investing.
Okay. We need to take one more break. When we come back, we'll wrap everything up and go over anything we may have missed in building our wealth. So we'll be right back with Rachel Podnos O'Leary. She's the author of 21st Century Wealth. Welcome back to Money Making Sense, the show that talks about all things money. Today, we're talking about how to build your wealth. We'll kind of get out of debt first and then build your wealth. Joining me today is Rachel Podnos O'Leary. She is the author of 21st Century Wealth. Rachel, for you were saying definitely pay off those higher interest rates of whatever that is, student loan or credit cards first. But if you have some things, whether it's a mortgage or even credit cards that are lower interest rate, like 3-ish%, give or take a little bit, you might not put all your money toward paying that off quickly. You would invest your money because that may have a higher return on investment.
That's right. That's right. Like, you know, general U.S. stock market returns, you know, historically have an average return of around 7% a year. And if you're working with, you know, a mortgage at 3 or 4%, I do think it makes sense from a purely monetary perspective to invest rather than putting every spare dollar towards a guaranteed return of maybe 3%.
Okay. And in the break, you mentioned something. You said asset protection and insurance, that we need to look into that or know about it. What is it?
So asset protection is just what it sounds like. And it's a really important part of any financial plan. And, you know, you work so hard to build a positive net worth and to save and build wealth. But there are certain things can happen in your life that can completely wipe it out. And that's a consideration. You know, when you're young, like I said, I wrote my book for millennials. When you're young, two of the worst things that can happen to you financially are for you to lose your ability to earn an income. For example, by becoming disabled, or to have a significant monetary judgment entered against you. And I am a lawyer, by the way, and so that's why I think about these sorts of things, and not everyone does, but I see it all the time, especially in the case of car accident judgments, which you don't think about until it happens to you. But car accident judgments can easily be millions of dollars.
Wow.
Most people are underinsured for this with auto insurance. Most auto policies might pay $300,000 or $500,000 to a car accident plaintiff who sues you for causing an accident which harmed them. And you're left on the hook for, let's say it's a $2 million judgment, which is not out of the ordinary and could really happen to any of us, even good drivers. That right there can completely wipe you out. You could be doing everything right, saving, paying down debt, and you're hit with a, you know, $1.5 million balance on an accident judgment. And there's actually a really, really simple thing that just about everyone can do to protect themselves from something like that. And it's purchasing personal umbrella liability insurance. Personal liability umbrella insurance is the term. And that's something you can get through your auto or homeowner's insurer or your renter's insurer in most cases. And it's sold in increments of $1 million of coverage. It costs hardly anything, a few hundred bucks a year. And basically, that covers you for personal liability in your home, or if you're driving a jet ski, or if you're driving a car, whatever it is that you're doing and you become liable for harming somebody. And that's just a very simple thing that almost everyone can do to protect their assets from liability creditors.
When you say it's a few hundred dollars a year, is that on top of the insurance you're already paying, or is that total with the insurance you normally pay?
On top. So for example, I have a $2 million umbrella liability policy through my auto insurer, and I'm paying, I think it's close to $400 a year, but it's for $2 million of coverage. To me, that's worth every penny. And that's above my auto premium.
Right. Okay. So I have a very old car because I'm one of those, hey, it's drivable and I'm not paying like for a new car and depreciation and all that. But I pay, I think it's $1,500 a year for my insurance. So I would be paying nearly $2,000 a year if I incorporated the personal liability umbrella insurance.
Yeah, I mean, it just depends, you know, premiums vary. It just depends on the insurer. And it depends on you, many things. But yes, roughly, it shouldn't cost $200 to $300 a year, I would say $200 to $400 a year per $1 million in coverage.
Well, that is something to think about. I actually didn't realize that because I've got the $500,000 deductible, or I don't know, it's deductible, but the protection if I'm in an accident. It never occurred to me that I could actually get sued for millions of dollars in an accident. That actually never crossed my mind.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, and this is doubly true for people that have either teenage drivers driving cars that are titled in their name, or an elderly parent, or really anyone, especially teenage drivers. You know, we've seen cases where a 19-year-old is driving a car titled in their parent's name and causes a fatal accident, and there's a $4 million judgment right there. And the parents are liable. This is something everyone should do. It's so easy. It's one phone call to your insurer. So that's a really big thing you can do to protect the wealth that you're building.
Okay. Is there anything else we should know about building our wealth before we sign out?
I think we've covered a lot of the high points.
All right. I can tell you what I learned was there are 5 steps to building our wealth. But it starts with sitting down and doing a personal financial audit and educating myself and setting my goals. That's sort of the first steps. And then for your method is, hey, get rid of any debt that you have that has a pretty high interest rate. And then once you have that, even if you have other debt, if it's lower than, you know, 5%, just start actually putting money away toward my savings, either retirement or whether I want to have a down payment for a house, anything like that. And then protect that wealth, get insurance. All right. Is there anything else?
Last thing I would say is it's also disability insurance is really important. Like I mentioned, you know, losing your ability to earn an income, especially at a young age, that can be financially devastating. Many employed workers who are employed, you know, by big companies, this is an included benefit. If you don't have disability insurance through your employer, there are individual policies. They're expensive, but certainly something to consider. I'll just leave it at that. And finally, I would say when it comes to that debt pay down versus investing, to be conservative, I would say really debt that is over 3-4%. Anything over that is, I would consider high interest for the purposes of making that decision. And it, you know, once you get over that, it's a lot less certain you can do better by investing. I think that's risky. So yeah, I would say 3-4%. Anything above that, I would certainly focus on debt pay down. Before investing.
Investing. Okay. All right. Well, thank you so much. Again, Rachel Podnos O'Leary, you are the author of 21st Century Wealth, and you just helped walk us through ways we can get rid of debt and improve our wealth and protect it all at the same time.
Yes. Thank you so much for having me on.
Thanks for listening. You can email me with any questions or topics you want to hear about at hkelly@ksl.com. That's hkelly@ksl.com. And because this is Money Making Sense, you can subscribe for free on Spotify, Overcast, Apple Podcasts, anywhere you listen to your favorite podcast, and you'll never miss another episode.
Thanks for being a Money Making Sense listener. Follow your common sense onto social media, Money Making Sense on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. In October of 1985, a woman named Cherie Warren left work at a busy Salt Lake City office
to meet her estranged husband at a downtown auto dealership.
She never made it home. Cherie's car surfaced weeks later in Las Vegas.
In the parking lot of a hotel casino.
No one knows how it got there.
Strange. It was strange.
Both Cherie's estranged husband and her boyfriend raised suspicion for investigators.
I kind of thought that he might have done something.
But no arrests were ever made. In Cold Season 3, we dig into double lives, make new connections in the case, and examine the difficulty raised by reasonable doubt.
We want answers just as much as anyone else.
They have creeps like that now too, so nothing's changed.
That's the new Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie. Now available anywhere you get your podcasts.